The following program is brought to you by Podcast One Sportsnet. Don't forget to download our new Podcast One app.
Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and, of course, your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL. PFF Podcast is brought to you by TrueCar. Every car comes with its share of stories. That ding in your bumper when you nervously picked up a first date, the luxury package you got after a big promotion, or the mileage you saved by riding your bike all summer. While you can't put a price tag on your stories, now with TrueCar you can at least find out what your car's worth when it's time to sell or trade it in. Just go to TrueCar, simply enter your license plate number, and watch your car's details pop up. Then answer a few questions. Navigation and moonroof? Watch as they bump up your value. High mileage? You already knew it was going to cost you, but now you know how much it dings your wallet so you can plan ahead. Once you're finished, you'll get a TrueCash offer sent in minutes, which you can take to a local certified dealer to cash out or trade in. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today. TrueCash offer not available in all areas. Welcome in to the PFF NFL Podcast. Steve Pelizzolo here with Sam Monson. Hello to everybody on YouTube and in the podcast world, Sam.
Yeah.
As always, got to welcome them. A very special show. We're going to preview both championship games, the Rams at the Saints, Patriots at the Chiefs. We'll hit both of those games in some great detail, and then we're going to kick you out, Sam.
Yeah?
You're out.
Okay.
Mike Renner is coming in.
A bit aggressive, but okay.
People have been asking for Mike.
Really?
At least one guy did.
One guy.
Yeah.
One random.
It's not a slight to you. It's just Mike. He's glorious with his bun, man bun and all that stuff. That's what they think. So we're going to talk draft. We're going to get a little bit of NFL draft discussion. We'll start to cycle in a little bit more draft discussion. And Mike's one of our draft experts. So we just kind of switch you out.
All right. That's okay. That's fine.
You're fine with that?
That's fine.
All right. Well, great. Glad you're taking it well. Let's get into it. We have, by the way, I'm keeping my phone here again. We have not had a baby yet.
No baby yet.
So I really hope that she calls just so I can leave you.
But how long is this going to drag out? Are you going to be nearly having a baby for like 3 weeks?
Yeah, because he's due in 3 weeks.
That's what I mean.
She's over here having false alarms way too early. It's her fault. And we have big weekend.
This is going to get tiring pretty soon. Like I'm on board with the excitement for like a day, you know? Oh,
I know, Monday was like,
right.
Yeah.
If this goes on for like 3 weeks, it's just going to get...
It's stressful for everybody.
Right.
Especially this weekend, you've got the games on Sunday, of course, and Saturday night is the company party.
Mm.
And like,
yeah, this is not well timed.
I don't want to be in the hospital.
We talked about that before.
Well, you guys are eating your steaks.
Oh, you are gonna grab the steak and walk out of the party.
Oh,
with
I'm taking
it.
My food. Yeah,
right on the way.
There's some good food at this party. So, anyway, we got to get into the previews.
Okay.
NFC Championship Sunday afternoon, the first game: Los Angeles Rams at the New Orleans Saints. A rematch. They're both rematches.
Right.
And we're talking high-octane offenses this whole weekend. It's going to be a great weekend of action.
Four best offenses in the NFL left. Four best teams, according to PFF grade.
That's right.
Chargers may have had a better record, but actually the Patriots are graded higher.
We did it right. I think we did it right. So what are we looking for in this one? Can the Rams slow down the Saints offense in the dome? And by the way, tale of two conferences here. The Saints... You got the indoor game, and then you got the
snow game.
The frigid, I don't know if it's snow.
Arctic
it's
just, blast.
Which is now getting up to like 23 degrees.
It's not that arctic.
Disappointing.
It's pretty cold.
But, you know, you got the NFC soft with all their dome games. Anyway, what are we looking for here?
A couple of things. One, this Rams defense, I think, will be a different unit than it was the first time these two teams played because that, well, one, you might have playoff Sue, who was sandbagging through the regular season because, frankly, why try? We're winning.
I love how one game is just created this narrative.
Now we're going to get playoff Sue, who's really trying hard in the postseason.
And playoff Troy Hill.
To get a Super Bowl. Well, Troy Hill's going to get it. Anyway, plus, you've got Aqib Talib back in the lineup, and Aqib Talib makes a massive difference to that team because everybody else, a cornerback, with the exception of playoff Troy Hill, gets gashed when he's not on the field. So
there's
those
a passer rating.
Things,
sorry, passer rating difference of about 41.
Yeah,
with Talib on the field versus off the field, better with him off in the field.
Right. Yep. So that those two things I think will make a big difference to the defense. And then the other side of the ball I think is fascinating because we finally saw the Rams adjust. You know, they'd had this incredible offense that was unstoppable for three quarters of the season, and then the final quarter, teams started to figure it out and slow it down and come up with a game plan to take away what they wanted to do, and they did that at the expense of opening up something else, right? But the Rams never took that opening. They just kept trying to do what they wanted to do and struggled. Now, the Cowboys, we speculated, would they come in with that game plan, the thing that had been proven to work, would they actually adopt that? Because it's not really what they do on defense.
Right.
But they did. They came in with that game plan, and for the first time, the Rams went, well, okay, if you're going to open up something else, we'll take that instead. I think that's huge for this Rams team because it shows that progression. It shows that evolution of the offense that isn't just a one-trick pony that needs you to fail at what the thing is they want to do.
That's balance.
If you take away what they want to do, they'll go to something else. And the best teams need to be able to do that in the playoffs because you're going to be going up against the rest of the best teams. So I think that game was a big statement from the Rams that they are – more balanced than we thought they were.
Yeah, and that balance, again, being able to take what the defense gives them. In the first matchup, Jared Goff had a fantastic game outside of the one interception that he had. Threw the ball almost directly to Alex Anzalone for a pick. Other than that, though, the numbers were great. 28 for 40 for 391 and three scores. 88.4 overall grade in that game. Had a dropped interception. Dropped touchdown. That was a spectacular throw in that game. So Goff played well in the first matchup, and then Breeze was pretty much unstoppable in the first matchup. 25 for 36, 346, and four touchdowns, a 95.3 overall grade, 137 passer rating. This was an absolute shootout. So with Talib back, is this going to be as explosive of a game? I think the defense is going to play a little bit better in this one.
Yeah, and I think it'll be a slightly different style if the Rams do get forced to the run game. That slows things down. Obviously, it's not going to be the same crazy shootout or like it was with the Rams and the Chiefs. When you're forced to run the ball a lot more, it slows the pace of the entire game. So, I think it may dial down a little bit. We may see a 20-something, 30-something game as opposed to whatever it was, 35-45. But it'll still be, I think offense will still be the key for both sides.
I think the key for the Rams is Marcus Peters. Because we talk about Talib, and he does solidify things, but Marcus Peters in the first matchup gave up 7 out of 9 for 146 to Michael Thomas in his coverage.
He's been bad this
including
year.
Including the 72-yarder at the end to kind of clinch the deal. So, you know, I don't know if it's just that they've changed the way Peters plays, if Peters had a little bit more leeway in that Kansas City scheme to kind of ad-lib and do his thing. But as a pure coverage player, he's good, not great, historically, as far as just covering guys one-on-one. Where he's great, though, is that ability to ad-lib, create plays, and just be an absolute playmaker. He's not making the big plays. It used to be like, well, yeah, he gave up 100, but he picked two passes off, so who cares? He doesn't have those big plays to offset things. So I'm looking at Peters, and I don't know if they're going to put him – they're not necessarily going to put him on Michael Thomas the whole time, again, because you have Talib back. But, man, he needs to play better. And even against Dallas, he struggled as
right.
well.
It does kind of open up the prospect, though, of we haven't really had those big turnover plays from Peters. Like, those are still there inherently in him. You know what I mean? He is a guy that reads the play well, that understands where the ball is going to go, and will break off plays to – make interceptions. We haven't really seen them yet this year, but they're, you know, the potential that they could still be out there is very real. And so if you know, at the very minimum, let's say that Talib is the guy covering Michael Thomas for most of the game, he will do a better job on him than Marcus Peters did the first time around. But then you still have Marcus Peters kind of lurking around the background that Drew Brees needs to be aware of because he can still make those plays.
And, you know, on the other side, you've got Marshon Lattimore playing at a higher level than he was before because he gave up, you know, 5 for 114 in the first matchup, including a couple big plays to Brandon Cooks. So, you know, that, you know, I think that the corners are going to play a little bit better. And just going back to the Rams for 1 second, when we talked about all those offseason moves and we said, man, they really got strong in the right areas. They make the Marcus Peters trade. They get to lead back. They re-sign or they bring LaMarcus Joyner back. They bring Nicole Roby Coleman back. And it's like, all right, they're strong in the right area in the secondary with of course, Aaron Donald up front. This is the game where they have to prove that all those offseason moves on the defensive side of the ball were worth it.
Lattimore is interesting because he had a definite sort of sophomore slump compared to that incredible rookie season, but he has been playing better down the second half of the season. So he gave up 2 touchdowns this year, didn't give up any as a rookie. Both those 2 touchdowns came in the first half of the season. All 4 of his interceptions have come in the second half of the season, along with some of the pass breakups as well. His completion percentage is up this year, but that again is down in the second half of the season. So he's definitely playing closer to rookie level Marshon Lattimore than he was at the first half of the year, which it's kind of like the Talib thing. That's a big part of this game now, is that we're starting to see the best version of Marshon Lattimore.
Let's discuss the Rams running game just a little bit because, yes, C.J. Anderson went 23 for 123 last week, and Todd Gurley had 16 carries for 115. You know, they took what was there. The offensive line was spectacular, and now, including the playoffs, Rob Havenstein, #1 run-blocking offensive tackle, and Andrew Whitworth, #2 in the NFL when you include the playoffs. And then Roger Saffold's #5 at guard. I mean, this is a great run-blocking unit. Do the Saints play the same exact way? Do they just say, hey, keep running it, we're not going to let Goff throw for 391 again? We're going to, in that, you know, it's going to keep you, you know, a little bit lower on the scoreboard.
Right. Well, that's the thing. So now, before this game, you had a definite game plan on defense to slow down the Rams offense because it was a couple of teams that had done it already and they had shown that you can stop this and the Rams hadn't yet adjusted. Now the Rams have adjusted. So what do? Do you roll in with the first game plan, which is we want to take away the thing you want to do?
Yeah.
But you know that they can make the adjustment and take advantage of that. Or do you say, okay, let's try and create some kind of balance on defense, and then that probably opens up the thing they want to do in the first place?
The thing is, when you don't commit numbers to the run game, it's risky, but you're just asking your defensive linemen to win, and Dallas's defensive linemen didn't win. Do the Saints have the horses to maybe win against this Rams offensive line? I don't know if they do. Sheldon Rankin's out for the season now.
That's a big loss.
You know, Cameron Jordan's nice and everything, but it takes multiple guys along the front holding their gap and or making a play to, you know, create some negative plays.
Right, against the #1 run-blocking offensive line in the game. So it's a very tough ask. Like I said, the plan going into last week was to do that, but now the Rams have shown that they're fine with that. It doesn't work anymore because the Rams have shown that they will make that adjustment. So do you still use the same game plan that will at least force them to plan B, or do you just try and create some kind of balance that hopefully limits both of them but probably opens up plan A?
And then on the other side, again, how do you slow down Drew Brees in the dome? I remember looking at the first matchup in my head thinking, wow, Aaron Donald was really neutralized up front, and he had 7 pressures.
Yeah.
It was his 4th worst grade of the year, and he had 7 pressures, including 4 QB hits. Andres Pete is the #37 left guard out of 38. Larry Warford's better. He's #19 out of 43 right guards in all the PFF grades. So I don't know. I think Aaron Donald's going to... I mean, they need Aaron Donald to be that take-the-game-over disruptive presence. Drew Brees in that quick passing game is just so difficult to get to him. He was only pressured 12 times.
Yeah, I think
the first matchup.
I think what you need to do just to get to Drew Brees and to disrupt the quick passing game is what the Eagles did, which is actually just get more aggressive in coverage. You basically can't stop them up front. You can't get to them quick enough if they're going to have the freedom to get the ball out of his hands that quickly. And that was what we were saying about this Eagles defensive line, is that the first time around they barely touched Drew Brees because they were able to get the ball out. The Eagles actually harried him quite a bit in this game because they got more aggressive outside. They disrupted those receivers at the line, and that bought them just a little bit more time for the pass rush to get home. So I think the Rams have to do the same kind of thing. They have to get more aggressive in coverage, and they're potentially able to do that with Talib back and hope that that buys them enough time for Aaron Donald to beat, you know, his guy. And given the guy he's going up against, that should happen.
And there were a lot of times last week the Eagles did a good job on first and second down, and then Drew Brees just came through on third and fourth down. He completed 89% of his passes, 11 yards per attempt, six first downs. There were some back-breaking plays. So the game plan for the Eagles was good. They took away a lot of the short stuff early, but they just failed on third down. The Rams can do the same exact thing. They just have to make more.
Do exactly the same thing, only cover the dig route.
Cover the dig route.
Because the Eagles didn't do that.
And we saw when Brees threw deep, he underthrew multiple deep balls. One was intercepted. One left a touchdown on the table. Like, take away the short and intermediate stuff. Make him throw the ball down the field. All that said, what do you got for a pick here, Sam?
I am going to go with the Rams to spring an upset.
Really?
Yeah.
I haven't looked at the picks this week. I just, you know, I just typed them in and left. I didn't look at anybody. So you're taking the Rams. I'm taking the Saints. I'm still going with, you know, this home field advantage, I think, is too strong. And I just think they're going to be too difficult to stop.
It's definitely real. I just think people are kind of us underestimating the Rams a little bit. This is a team that's still the number one graded team at PFF. And I think people looked at their struggles and basically wrote them off as, okay, we've figured out the Rams now. But I think that adjustment that they made is huge. They've now answered the thing that was causing them problems. They have the ability to go into New Orleans and win.
No, I don't doubt it. I think they can as well. I'm looking forward to a good game. And then the evening game, the AFC Championship. They originally said it might be between -2 and -10. Now it's closer to like 18 to 23 degrees. Either way, the cold might play a factor in this
still
one.
Still pretty nippy. I wouldn't want to be out there in a t-shirt.
No, on my couch
right is
a great place to be. Chiefs hosting the Patriots. Of course, they played back in week six. The Patriots
the underdog Patriots.
Well, nobody believes in them. Nobody believes. 43-40, the Patriots won the first time around, despite being underdogs this whole season with nobody believing.
It is nauseating, the extent to which they are trying to manufacture underdog status.
Look,
for a team that hasn't been an underdog in a game for how long?
Talking heads all over the place,
Steve,
have been calling for the end of a dynasty.
How long, Steve, since they were last underdogs in a game?
I don't know, like 2013 or something? Right. With Brady as quarterback. It's like 2013. Yeah.
Like a long time. And you go into one game and you're like, oh, we're the underdogs. Nobody thinks we can win. It's disgusting.
You got talking heads,
Steve,
talking about Brady falling off a cliff and arm strength's not there. Like, just it's manufactured fake analysis too. So it's all fake.
It's sickening.
Another fascinating matchup. You've got two potentially explosive offenses. The Chiefs are always explosive. The Patriots, as we saw last week, still have it in them to win any given way and really pick apart defenses. But it's a different game for both teams. The Chiefs and Patriots both played these zone-heavy teams a week ago in the Colts and Chargers. This week, both teams love to play a man coverage.
Yeah.
It's what they did the first time around. So it's going to be it's that type of game.
We're talking
it's
about the first and third team in the NFL in terms of man coverage.
In pure man coverage. And it's not just like, here's lineup, let's just line up and play man and, you know, let's see what happens. They're creative man coverage teams. We always say when you play this cover one scheme, you have these extra defenders around, and both teams are creative with what they do with the extra defenders. What you can do with the extra defenders is say, go watch Tyreek Hill. Go double Gronkowski. Go double Travis Kelce. So that's going to be the cat and mouse game in this one. Man coverage, extra defenders, what do these teams try to take away in the cold, where it's a little bit tougher to pass?
Well, yeah, that's the first thing, is that the cold legitimately has the weather could potentially hamper both these offenses more than either defense can. Like, that's the kind of impact the cold weather could have on this game, depending on where it falls in that spectrum of just, you know, pretty cold to Arctic storm with blizzards, you know, all that kind of stuff. So the cold weather could have a really big impact. And I think if it does, it's hard to suggest that impact would be beneficial for anybody other than the Patriots.
If you're taking the more explosive pass offense, which is the Chiefs, and you're bringing them back down to earth a little bit,
if it's impacting both teams essentially the same, I think it's hurting the Chiefs more than it's hurting the Patriots. That being said, you're right. It becomes really fascinating because the Chargers had probably the worst game plan you could possibly have going up against Tom Brady and did nothing to change it. The Chiefs, if nothing else, have the right game plan just by default going up against Tom Brady. They play a more man coverage scheme, which is how you slow down Brady. That's not to say he can't get it done anyway, but if you're going to run something against him, this is the thing to run.
Right.
they are also a completely different defense at home. So the splits are insane. Now, part of that is manufactured by the fact they played better teams on the road than they have at home.
I think for this year in particular, that's
right. But we're talking about 17 points in difference. A PFF grade of 63 versus 89 when they're at home versus on the road. Those are monstrous. And it isn't just this year. Like, they've had a split of more than 5 points better at home for the last three straight seasons.
Right.
So this is an Alex Smith holdover as well. This isn't just this Mahomes team and the better teams, etc. They are a different unit at home than they are on the road. And that's big, because we've said all year long that this Chiefs offense is so good, if the defense just plays a little bit better, they're really hard to stop.
Yeah.
Now, that's what they're doing. At home, they're playing a little bit better, even if it is looking a lot better because of the numbers they have going up against poorer teams. So I think they have a shot to slow down Brady. And the question is, can the Patriots defense slow down Mahomes and the Chiefs, which they kind of did the first time?
Here are the interesting numbers from the first one, because we're talking about Belichick second time around against, you know, the new phenom,
yeah,
which is just a storyline in itself, right? The first time around, by PFF grade, they held Mahomes to his lowest grade when throwing from the pocket. And I know there's a narrative out there that's like, oh, you got to keep Mahomes in the pocket, you got to keep Mahomes in the pocket, which, you know, to a point, you're going to want to do that. But he also has a near identical passer rating inside and outside the pocket on the season.
And the number one passer rating from inside the pocket.
Right. So it's not like, now a lot of the inside the pocket stuff, the reason why the passer rating is up, because that's where you have all your right. screen passes, right? So obviously.
And
that's,
the tap passes.
The tap passes, all the cheap stuff.
Right.
So in theory, so those don't count because you're not keeping him in the pocket. He's going to be from the pocket on those plays. So technically, you do probably want to keep him in the pocket. And that's always been Belichick's team goal, is to, you know, let's keep these mobile guys in the pocket and let's, you know, take our chances there. In the first matchup, they also did a really good job of throwing some zero blitzes, like scary zero blitzes, remember?
Yes.
Where it's like Tyreek Hill's one-on-one and he's 12 steps behind somebody.
Yeah.
And you're just praying as a defense that you get to Mahomes.
And it just did.
And he just underthrew it or whatever
right.
it was.
He was cocked ready to throw that yeah. ball, and the blitz just got to him in time.
The Chiefs might be ready for those. Now, if the Chiefs are ready for those this week, then here's a quick 75-yard touchdown, right?
Yeah.
And they had a couple of those 70-plus yard scores in that game. But they weren't necessarily against – they were against zone. They were against, like, cover two, like the most conservative type of plays, because Mahomes was so special outside the pocket. He averaged over 14 yards per attempt outside the pocket. That was the highest of the season. So you know the Patriots are looking at that, saying, all right, we're going to take our chances inside the pocket, make him make good decision after good decision after good decision, which he's done. And this is a pick-your-poison type of thing we keep mentioning. Mahomes has the second lowest percentage of negatively graded throws. That's insane for the type of, you know – just the type of chances and difficult throws that he makes, second lowest percentage of negatively graded throws behind only Drew Brees. That's the scary thing when you're going up against Patrick Mahomes. That's the most impressive thing about his season, is there's really no formula. You just kind of
right.
take your chances with him inside the pocket, making good decision after good decision.
I mean, that's what we've been saying, is that I don't know what the game plan is to slow down Mahomes. Probably it's try and keep him in the pocket, but it's not like that's working.
Right.
Like, that's maybe the lesser of two evils, but he's still carving everybody up from inside the pocket. So, yeah, I mean, the thing I think they really need to figure out is how they address the weapons that Kansas City
right.
has. Now, the one difference from the first time around is there's no Kareem Hunt. And not because he's – forget the running game aspect of that. Kareem Hunt, one of the things that is kind of lesser appreciated about him on the field is his – the way he was a weapon as a receiver. Like, he would go one-on-one with guys, get really favorable matchups, and be deep down the field as a receiving target. Williams has done really well in his stead as a ball carrier, as a running back, but is he the same kind of matchup problem? Because they were able to get a few decent looks with Kareem Hunt in the first game, one-on-one with some linebackers.
He had multiple steps on Dante Hightower.
Right. Now, do they have those same plays there with Williams? I don't know, but that's a potential mismatch. Then the Patriots need to figure out what to do with Tyreek Hill, because he is the most dangerous player in this offense, and can you dedicate enough resources to him without leaving Travis Kelce wide open all day? That's the big challenge.
And we saw last week, Sammy Watkins came back and made some plays. So you can't completely forget about Watkins. He played in the first matchup. Stephon Gilmore faced him most of the time. Gilmore's
right.
our top-graded corner. Watkins only caught 2 out of 4 for about 18, I think it was, the first matchup. So the way the Patriots generally do this, I could see them taking Gilmore, putting him on Watkins, and then saying, okay, team effort on Tyreek and team effort on Kelsey. It comes to this cover one type thing. Do you put somebody at the line of scrimmage to try to beat up Tyreek Hill, which rarely works well? We saw that with Jalen Ramsey this year. We've seen it with good big corners. They can't always get their hands on
him. Can't always, but I think that's the only way of doing it. Like Ramsey, I think it worked with Ramsey. It's just that when it doesn't work, it's bad. The problem with that is it's an all or nothing strategy.
Right.
And how many times do you need the nothing part of that before it's a bad plan overall? Like Ramsey, held, 60 plays in a game. If it works, 60 plays in a game, 40 passes, let's say it works 38. But the two times it doesn't, it's at least 30 yards down the sideline.
It's an automatic
now,
touchdown.
Is that worth it? Like how many of those bad plays do you need before it's a failing strategy?
The trouble with it is, you're trying to avoid those big plays. It sounds good in theory, but Tyreek Hill's not a static player. You don't just always know where he is. He's in motion half the time.
Right.
He's all over the place. It's not as simple as you're going to go press him, you're going to play safety over the top. But I do think if you're talking strategy, if in just broad terms, you're playing cover one, you have somebody assigned to him, and you have two extra players to play with. One of them's keeping an eye on Tyreek Hill. The other one's keeping an eye on Travis Kelce. And you make Sammy Watkins, you have your best corner, who's Gilmore, on Watkins, and you make the other guys beat you as best you can, in theory. I mean, that's got to be New England's strategy.
Right. You keep Mahomes in the pocket, you try and take away two devastating weapons with essentially team help and double teams, and you leave Gilmore one-on-one with the third guy in the offense and hope it's enough.
Have you seen a lot of Tom Brady numbers floating around there over the last few days when you look at his playoff output and everything? His last, in just his games at age 35 or older, he's played 16 games. He's thrown for 5,284 yards over his last 16 playoff games. Mm-hmm. So essentially, Mahomes threw for just over 5,000 this year.
Yeah.
Brady's done that in his last 16 playoff games. 34 touchdowns, 95.3 passer rating, 12-4 record. Still getting better overall. So I wouldn't write off Brady just yet, even though I'm going to. I'm going to take the Chiefs.
Yeah.
Because I just think they're the better team. The home field advantage is key.
I'm going to take the Chiefs as well, though I get way more concerned about that if the weather is bad.
Yeah.
If the weather is bad enough that it's really impacting both those offenses, I think the Patriots are much better positioned to succeed in terrible conditions.
Do we see another? Is this an epic game? Brady has a chance to make a big comeback at the end. Or are we seeing one where the Chiefs pull away?
I don't know. It's tough to pick against Brady, period, but it's really tough to picture games where they just don't have a shot, right? They're always close enough that it's at least in the balance towards the end. Plus, I think as viewers, we all deserve to see the moment where in a 2-minute drive at the end of the game, Brady's about to get it done and Tony Romo just goes like full off the scale on,
here we go, Jim. Here comes Tommy Brady. He's coming out.
Right.
The big comeback.
They have the Super Bowl as well, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
Can you imagine
Brady for both of those?
A game-winning drive in the Super Bowl. Like, Romo would just, he would overload. He would just, the broadcast would end.
That's
like
what we're rooting for.
Like one of those, one of those kind of end of broadcast beeps where it's just beep, except it would be Romo like, beep. He would just, the brain would be fried, eyes roll back in his head.
That's what we're rooting for.
Yeah, that's what I want to see.
So I'm picking the Chiefs, which means I'm picking Chiefs Saints, and you're picking Chiefs Rams.
Yeah, rematch of the best game ever in NFL history, apparently, if you listen to some people.
Well, it was exciting, 54-51. So there you have it. That's our championship week preview. We're now going to kick you out.
I'm out.
And
I'm gone.
You're just, all right. Thanks for your work, Sam. It's Mike Renner time. Let's discuss a little NFL draft. All right, segment two of the podcast. Let's start discussing the NFL draft. Welcome in, Mike Renner. Welcome back.
Feels good to be back. Draft season is my favorite season because that's when you guys let me back on the podcast.
That is when we let you back. So we'll have more and more of you on the podcast moving forward. We'll be doing some weekly draft stuff. Mm-hmm. Eventually, we'll be doing probably two draft podcasts per week because that's what the people want, Mike. They love it. So
it matters.
Let's start just with a broad overview. We'll have many different ways we're going to attack this. We'll talk about position groups, our favorite players, our big boards. We'll talk about mock drafts and all that stuff. Do you want to do a mock in a couple weeks, by the way?
Of course. Okay. Steve, I want to do a mock every single day.
Let's do it. In 2 weeks,
yeah,
you're going to do a mock.
Right.
My mock's doing pretty well. Everybody's watching it on YouTube. Everybody's watching it. So I think we'll just have competition so you can have
that
the most
viewed. Okay. Continue.
All right. So we're going to hit the biggest draft storylines. So about 20 minutes, 20 to 30 minutes, just going through the biggest storylines. So let's start with the quarterback situation. It's always the biggest story. Last year, there were 5 first-round quarterbacks. This year,
well, 4 and a wide receiver. But continue.
Wow. 4 and a wide receiver.
Still, the jokes never get old.
Playoff quarterback. Don't talk about Josh Allen like that. He's more of a tight end. Playoff quarterback Lamar Jackson. You're calling a wide receiver. Ouch.
It's
so,
a joke, guys.
Last year, 5 first-round quarterbacks. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, this quarterback class is loaded. This year, major question marks. Now Kyler Murray says he's going to the NFL draft, or at least declaring. What are we looking at here with this quarterback situation?
Yeah, I think about midway through this past season, we were wondering if there was anyone who was going to be worthy of a first-round pick. Now I think we've settled on the fact that Dwayne Haskins, after he closed the season strongly, we questioned him after that Penn State game where he really crumbled under pressure in that one. Closed season strong. I think we're comfortable with him in the first round. We also like Kyler Murray from what he's done. If he does end up going to the NFL draft, from a just say basically a skill set standpoint, he's not a perfect prospect by any means. He's not there.
Well, no, he's 5'10".
But the skills that he has as a passer and runner are enough to put him in the first round. But then after that, it's if someone else is going in the first round, it's going to be reachy for sure, in our opinion, at this point.
Yeah.
The Drew Lock, though, Daniel Jones, they're rumored to be there at this point, which
I don't love. Drew Lock has grown on me. Mm-hmm. I'll say I've liked his progression year over year at Missouri. Daniel Jones, just not there yet.
Yes.
I mean, this is purely he's 6'5".
The Duke quarterback, in case you're
familiar. Yeah, Duke quarterback Daniel Jones, 6'5", 220. One of those guys who's kind of on the watch list because he's got NFL-type skills. He can make NFL-type throws, and he's got pretty good movement for, you know, a 6'5", 220-plus pound player. He just has not been good on a throw-for-throw basis the last couple of years. Will Greer's another guy that we really like. Probably just feel more comfortable with him at the back end of the first. Let's discuss Kyler really quick because that's the biggest story of this whole thing. I mean, he's 5'10", but he goes out there. He's got our highest-graded passing grade, highest-graded rushing grade last year at Oklahoma. He's not as good as Baker Mayfield. I think we're just going to keep saying that over and over again. Even though the grade was similar, we had 3 years of data on Baker playing at an elite level, not just one. And Baker did most of his stuff in the pocket and in places that translates to the next level.
Yes.
And Kyler's a step below that, but he's still a very good prospect.
Yes, and he's going to be a difficult eval because defense has also played him differently than they played Baker.
True.
He faced basically more three-man rushes, or he did face more three-man rushes than any other quarterback in the country this
season.
About
a third of his dropbacks.
And also had more clean pockets than basically any quarterback in the country this season. He was sitting back there all day long. It didn't have to make quick sort of NFL progressions to make plays down the field. Now, when the ball left his hand, from when the ball left his hand to where it went to the wide receiver, he was about as good as any quarterback in the country, probably the best quarterback in the country in terms of that. But that's only part of the game in the NFL. You have to be able to do a lot of other things to play the quarterback position successfully. So will he get to that point? That's the tough one to part. But I'm going to bet on the guy who has that arm talent, the guy who has that skill set already, than the guy who's wildly inaccurate but, you know, looks the part already.
So here's the thing, right? Mm-hmm. Most people are going to say, well, Kyler Murray comes with a lot of question marks because he's 5'10".
Mm-hmm.
But who has more question marks, Kyler Murray or Drew Lock or Daniel Jones?
Yes, right.
It's the 6'4 quarterbacks that have bigger question marks because Drew Lock has not done a good job. He's not in a system that really works on this a whole lot, but he doesn't go through progressions, get to a second read, have great footwork in the pocket. Same thing with Daniel Jones. Throw-for-throw accuracy, his ability to get to the next receiver accurately hasn't been great. Will Greer, I have more concerns about maybe downfield arm strength a little bit. I like his accuracy. He could throw at the intermediate level. He had a ton of deep balls that were pretty good in the Big 12, but you know it doesn't always translate. So I think those guys might have more question marks than Kyler, but everybody's going to talk about Kyler's height.
Yeah, everyone's going to talk about his height, but it goes back to, not going to say like Baker last year, but if the biggest knock on him is his height, I don't think that's really a knock. And it's, if you're disregarding a guy because he's undersized, well, I don't think you're looking at how the game is played in 2018 and, you know, in 2019. It's only going to trend that way more in the future. It is not a pure pocket passing game anymore. So much of what wins in the NFL today is outside the pocket or utilizing the quarterback as a rushing threat, utilizing his legs, not necessarily, you know, getting him, exposing him to more shots, but just having that threat there impacts defenses so much. And we've seen it with a ton of quarterbacks now. It's been proven again and again that that can work in the NFL. And so if you're writing him off because of that, I think you're just wholly close-minded.
So I agree. This is the time for him to enter the NFL. Mm-hmm. I do think if this was maybe 10, 15 years ago, maybe he's saying, no, I'm going to play baseball. Nobody's going to give me this opportunity. Let's wrap up the QB discussion with Haskins. A lot of people are calling him maybe the slam dunk top quarterback off the board, and I like a lot of what he does. I think his balance in the pocket is really nice. He throws really well from a clean pocket. He's got good zip on the ball, accurate to the intermediate level, which I think is, you know, huge. I mean, the most important thing probably at the NFL level, I do hate how he played under pressure. And I know we always talk about here about how consistent clean pocket stuff is versus under pressure, but he was at such a poor level from a PFF grade standpoint. And it was in those big games, those big road games against a Penn State, against Purdue, and other games where he really did struggle anytime guys were in his face. So that's where I have question marks about Haskins. Also, his numbers were a little inflated. He had a great scheme and playmakers there. So I thought he was good, not great, last year for Ohio State.
Yeah, he does. He's not without question marks. And again, when you see a guy only play for 1 year, and I guess this applies to Kyler Murray too, you just get a little concerned with small sample size because you haven't faced, you'd like to see a breadth of a guy playing 2, 3, 4 years, sort of like Mitchell Trubisky coming out. He just only had that one season to where, when you have those question marks, like Trubisky had the NC State game, I think it was, where it was just you have this ugly on tape. You don't know if that's something that he sort of hid well and is going to come out more at the next level, or if that is just a blip on the radar.
And we use the term with Trubisky that maybe he's got more room to grow, and you could say that for Haskins. Like they're still, and for Kyler, I mean, they're young quarterbacks from a starting standpoint. So does that give them more room to grow, or does that just cloud your evaluation because you have less to work off, like you're saying? So those are the types of question marks we'll be hoping to answer over
these
next couple
months. Haskins' arm talent, love his arm talent. So,
oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I love his arm quite a bit. So what we're doing here at PFF, we've got the production grade for all these guys, and then we go back, we rewatch these guys. Zach Robinson's going to be getting in there on all the quarterbacks. He's got some strong opinions on all these guys. He's training a couple guys out in California right now.
That sounds like a conflict of interest, I'll just say.
No, Zach is very honest.
I know, but it's still, I'm kidding.
We do protect him, though. Yeah. We protect him. He can't. He can't trash guys that he's working with. But he's very honest about his evaluations, which I think is great. So we'll have much more on the quarterbacks moving forward. The second biggest story, Mike, defensive line.
Yes.
There's a million guys here.
Great,
how do we
great draft to be in need of defensive line. Just going through a little napkin, back of the napkin sort of count here. I counted 13. Very realistic number, 13 being 13 defensive linemen going in the first round of this draft. That could even go higher with guys, you know, moving throughout the draft process, depending on, you know, who tests well, who has a good Senior Bowl, that sort of thing. I think realistically, 13 is almost like a baseline. I think that is where we're going to end up when it comes, you know, late April, who ends up getting off the board.
We're talking about Quinnen Williams. He was our top guy. Do you have Ed Oliver on this list?
I don't even have Ed Oliver on that list.
I'm looking at this list that you wrote down here, and you even forgot Ed Oliver. The guy
14. That's why I said 13 is the baseline.
People were talking about Ed Oliver going top 10. So there's multiple reasons why Ed Oliver might not go top 10. First off, because there's 13 other guys that are in this mix in the first round. And secondly, because, he's probably about 275 pounds and 6'1". And we usually are the people that are like, no, worry about production, not the size. But that's our bigger concern with Oliver than the 270 pounds is the fact that he never really dominated in the AAC from a pass rush perspective.
Was it 25 pressures this past season? Yeah, that was his highest of his career.
His best year rushing the passer.
Which, you know, Quinnen doubled that this year. That's not great for a guy who you think this undersized guy is going to struggle then more in the run game at the next level. An undersized defense tackle, you worry about him struggling, not in the run game, not as a pass rusher. He hasn't even done it as a pass rusher yet. While the traits are certainly there, you'd love to have seen him do it already. I wish he would have gone to This is not, no offense to Houston, anyone who went to Houston, Houston coaching staff, if you're listening, no offense. A school with better coaching staff that would have developed him more than they did at Houston, because he was the same player basically he was freshman year in terms of the developmental curve wise.
But that might work in his favor, right?
Yeah.
When you say, okay, when he does get NFL coaching. And that sounds cliche, but I like the way you're using it, because specifically what you saw with your eyes.
Yeah.
And
it just did not improve.
We're on the same page as far as that. So we're talking Quinnen Williams from Alabama, Jeffrey Simmons from Mississippi State, Christian Wilkins and Dexter Lawrence out of Clemson, Josh Allen from Kentucky could be a top five pick now.
Yeah.
We've got a big profile on him coming out very soon that I think is very well done by our video guys. Just keep your eyes open for that on YouTube shortly. Ja'Kai Polite from Florida. Did you even get Burns in here?
I didn't get Brian Burns.
Got Brian Burns. 15
Muffle.
Guys. I'm just looking at the list. I like how you did it off the top of your head.
We're
still missing guys here.
Draymond
Jones, Jerry Tillery. So there's a lot of players. There's three Clemson players. Cleveland Farrell is in there as well. Mm-hmm. Brian Burns from Florida State. So I'm just naming a bunch of players.
Rashawn Gary, Montez Sweat, Nick Bosa.
Rashawn Gary and Montez Sweat feel like the guys that there's a little bit of projection there. It's trait.
Gary is so projection.
Gary really is.
Yes, but I'd be very surprised if he doesn't go in the first round.
Keep asking me why Rashawn Gary's not in my first round mock, and it's because you'll hear us say this over and over. We feel best about our defensive line grades as far as translating to the NFL. Mm-hmm. So it just raises a question mark. It's not that he can't do it, but if there's one place where I'm going to rely on the grades more than other places based off our 4 years, 5 years now doing this, it's on the defensive line. And Gary never dominated in college.
Not even close to dominating. It even didn't even really have games where he took over where it's like, oh, he should. Gary was everywhere in that game. You know, even against when you have that physical sort of advantage, it should at least show up when you're facing slap tackles who don't know what they're doing, who are, 285 pounds and can't hold up to a bull rush to save their lives. That's when you should take over games. Rashawn Gary didn't even do that.
Chase Winovich did it a lot more than him.
Correct.
His high-energy teammate on the other side.
Ooh, we need like a cliche segment, but we'll do that later. Yeah,
high-energy motor guy. Nick Bosa, you mentioned briefly, but yeah, he's in the running to be the number one overall pick, by the way, because we have 2 years plus another 112, 115 snaps or so from last year where he did dominate. He just straight dominated straight start to finish. We hate making the brother comps, but from a grade standpoint, the college grades for Nick versus Joey Bosa, very, very similar, and we've seen what Joey's done at the NFL level. So the defensive line class, that's your second biggest story. Where
could
do all
half
these
the
guys
first round. I mean, it could be half the first round, realistically. That's not even exaggeration, and I don't even think it's one of those where they're going to get pushed down because there's so many good ones and you'll find one in the second round. No, because they're all so good and everyone covets defensive line so highly that you better go get one, because there's a handful of elite and then there's a handful of good, and then I'm not sure there's a ton of second and third rounders that I'm going to be coveting highly.
I think they might fall, though, because if you look, there's always going to be a team. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about the receivers in a second, but there's always going to be a team that's like, all right, let me just squeeze these couple offensive linemen in there, and I need a tackle.
Yeah,
there's always some rogue safety that ends up in the first round. Hello.
Someone drafts purely based on need.
Terrell Edmonds. Hello. Yeah. So you just never really know.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many players that could, or you look at the Raiders with three picks, and
they
need
draft
defensive
three
linemen.
Defensive linemen, or maybe they could.
Do they? Well, I mean, at least get two. They could at least get two and completely revamp that pass rush. All right, let's discuss the wide receiver class, the third biggest story about with regard to this draft class. It's similar to the defensive linemen, although probably with more question marks. There are a bunch of big receivers in this class.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of guys who have first-round type of talent, but you've talked about this a lot, the way the NFL's going, do we really want these 6'3", 6'4", 6'5", wide receivers? And, what happens with the wide receiver board? Who's the first wide receiver off the board? It's wide open.
That's more of the biggest question with me. It's not necessarily, who's number one, whatever, because every team's going to have their own eval. But it's the fact that we have this wide receiver class where a good chunk of the top guys are these contested catch, larger wide receivers, not necessarily the route runners, the separators, the quicker guys. They are, N'Keal Harry, Kelvin Harmon, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, D.K. Metcalf, Akeem Butler, all 6'4s or above. All big catch radius guys, all not extremely athletic enough to where you say, oh, they're, on the Julio Jones level of large, where it doesn't really matter. You're gonna you're athletic enough and big enough that you're just gonna be separating constantly.
That's what separates Julio, not to use pun. So Julio and AJ Green.
Yes.
Good route runners, they can get open, and oh by the way, in contested catches they can win.
Yes. So I don't think any of them are at that level. So at that point, I'm not calling them Laquon Treadwell, but I do think that that has the that is a higher sort of bust rate of those guys who can't separate consistently at a high level. The bigger guys, I'm not sure you're trending. The NFL's trending towards that, so we'll see where that sort of group of guys ends up getting taken.
So does that make PFF's highest graded receiver Andy Isabella
yes,
a little bit more coveted? Or Marquise Brown is more of a speed guy?
I do think Andy Isabella, not to get derailed here, but I think he's going to be this year's Cooper Kupp in terms of no one's going to take him in the first round. No one is willing to take a 5'9 white receiver in the first round and wow. say, you know, we're going to make him, oh, he's going to be our number one, because you want number one, you know, in quotation marks, sort of traits from a guy you're going to draft in the first round. But at the same time, I think he's going to be incredibly productive because he does separate. He is incredibly fast. He has all the tools to win at the NFL level, but someone's going to take him around 2 or 3 and get a great player.
Wow. So the wide receiver class, there's so guys like N'Keal Harry, who seemed like he was destined to be a first-round pick a few years ago, might actually be better as a second-round prospect. As we get
they might
into
get pushed down. Yes,
J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, who I love from Stanford. I mean, they just straight used him as a power forward at times. I've never seen anything like it. They would just go tell him box out and like here call for the ball, and he would do it. Great body control, DK Metcalf, and that upside. So there, there's upside.
Oh.
DK Metcalf. A lot of people talking about him as the first round pick. He's kind of like the Rashawn Gary of wide receivers, though. Right?
Yes.
He's got all the skills, but just
never
really dominated.
Really got dominated, correct.
So there's a lot to unpack with this wide receiver class. And again, we're only scratching the surface on our draft evaluations. We've got the grades. Those are the guiding light, so to speak. And then we kind of sift through and figure out the most important parts of them and what we see from skill sets and everything. So that's what we'll be doing over these next few weeks. All right, let's wrap this up. Those are the three biggest storylines. We always like to have segments where we say, okay, we've either just watched these guys and you know these guys are standing out to us.
My
or,
guys. No, yeah, this is my guy.
This is your my guy segment?
This is a my guy.
All right.
Early my guy.
Give me one guy that's your guy that you like more than other people.
Christian Fulton, the cornerback from LSU. I think he is a surefire first-round pick. Now,
whoa.
I'm not sure he goes in the first round because, little backstory, 2 years ago he cheated on a drug test at LSU. I admire the fact that he admits he cheated on the drug test. He said as much, but that comes with a 2-year suspension when you cheat on it. So he was suspended for 2 years, ended up appealing, got it reduced to 1 year. This was his first year of actually playing college football, and he matched Greedy Williams play for play. This past season was fantastic there in the secondary for LSU. I think he's more athletic than Greedy. I think he has better makeup speed. He really is incredibly smooth. I don't have a lot of question marks about him. I think he's in that top cornerback group for me. Now, I don't know where he's going to go. Like I said, the off-field is there, but that's my guy at the moment.
That's your guy. Add it. So we've in our draft document, Mike, we do have the My Guys tab. So if you want
to
start accumulating that, we like to keep track of these things. Okay, my guy for this week, you mentioned him earlier, Hakeem Butler, the big dude from Iowa State. I noticed – so he was a preseason my guy for me.
Yeah.
As we're going through our preseason stuff, and it's like, all right, this guy's flashed this or showing a little bit of this. I think he could break out, and Hakeem Butler – made me look good in that regard because he showed up a lot, at times on tape, and then this year was just really, really good. Same question marks as these other big receivers. Can he separate? But I think the thing I liked about him is that he moves pretty well for 6'6".
Yeah.
And has that body control and contested catchability.
22 yards per catch this season. Yeah. Ridiculous deep threat. And he had that one play against, who was it, the highlight where he just
Oklahoma
rolled over. Yes.
I think it was against Oklahoma.
Yes. That was
got me a lot of retweets.
Yeah.
I put that video out there. But I've, that was
freakish.
There's a metric right there. How many times do I cap your plays, put them on Twitter, tweet them out,
Let's get George and Eric, the analytics team, to break that down.
Yeah.
RTs by, that could.
Yeah. How many retweets and likes do you get on your biggest plays?
Versus production in the NFL. That could be, there's something there.
Because I think if there's a correlation there, Hakeem Butler has a bright future.
Hakeem Butler is an under-the-radar guy. Yeah.
Had some spectacular
We've identified
plays.
Him as an RT legend.
So that's my guy that we're highlighting for this week. We'll be doing that every week. We'll be highlighting guys that we like a little bit more than others. Just scratching the surface on our draft content, Mike. It's good to have you back.
Glad to be back.
We'll be doing a lot more in future weeks. Definitely want everybody's feedback as well. So what do you guys want to hear about? If you guys have specific questions, this is a great time to do it as we're going through all of our draft evaluations. Thanks to everybody for listening to the PFF NFL podcast. And we'll be back here Monday morning with an AFC and NFC championship week review. Quick break to tell you guys about NFL Game Pass, the only way that you can replay every game all season long. You can relive all the gutsy calls, crazy catches, wild comebacks, and breakout stars from every game every week. It's all the action, all the football you can handle, all in one place. So every game that we're talking about right now, you guys can rewatch it after the fact. I'm going to be going back, and you guys can too. Go check out Lamar Jackson in week one. Go check out Dak Prescott and what that Cowboys offense actually did. Go check out Kyler Murray and his NFL debut. That's my favorite thing about NFL Game Pass. You can go back and watch at any time. And if you haven't watched a condensed game yet, you have to try it out. It's every play from the game back to back to back, so you can replay an entire NFL game in the fraction of the time it normally takes. It's how I'm able to follow all the MVP candidates, all the breakout stars, and of course your waiver wire pickups all season long. To see all the action this season and stay on top of all the big storylines, you need NFL Game Pass. Best of all, you can kick off the 2019 NFL season with a 7-day free trial of NFL Game Pass. Just sign up now at NFL.com/ProFootballFocusNFL.